$20,000 off, 0% APR for 72 months. It is the 2018 model clearance event at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. Our great friends at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, they present the Ira Kaufman podcast and all of Ira's work at joebucksfan.com. We have been out to both dealerships. They are fantastic. Of course, the Ed Morse name means more than 70 years of service and commitment to the community across Florida. At Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, they have the new XT4, the beautiful crossover, is available. 0.9% APR for qualified buyers. Get all the details at edmorescadillacbrandon.com. And they have a long list of special offers. It's right there on the homepage of the website. You will be impressed. And of course, the signature showroom at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher. General manager Brian Danahy has been on our show. He's a great friend of the podcast and Bucks fans everywhere. And the offers are fantastic. Get to edmorescadillactampa.com. We thank Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon and Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa for all of their support. You should support them. And here's Ira.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Happy Thursday. The Ira Kaufman podcast is on. Today we're live at Hooters on Hillsboro with the sage of Tampa Bay sports. Mr. Ira Kaufman is the star of the show. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper is here. And Ira, it is an important game week. December football is upon us in a very, very big way, even though we had it the other day. But Ira, first, you look great in your Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa special gear you have on there. And, of course, your podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon.
Stevie, how am I supposed to focus on this key NFC South clash when I'm still recovering from getting rear-ended? I got rear-ended sitting at a light.
Yeah,
What's going on in this world,
Steve? I'm glad you qualified that.
Yeah, sitting at a light. You're a... Well done, DeKemper. See, Lee's listening over there. My wife, Steve, try to compose yourself over here, folks. Right now, you are seeing Isbitz trying to stop from the total breakdown in laughter.
I'm fully composed, Ira.
All right, we see where your mind is over there.
Well, I'm in a Hooters. What do you expect?
My poor wife still suffering some neck pain over there. My car, 3 months old, crushed from the back. Can't open the trunk. Get ready, people, because what I'm about to tell you, you can't make it up. Couldn't open the trunk, and I had a calzone in the trunk. A calzone. When I mentioned it to the police that were gathering information about the accident, one guy asked me what kind of calzone it was. I told him it was ham and cheese. He then asked me where I got it from.
Did
he? I told him in Palm Harbor, and I told him the name of the restaurant, and the guy goes, "That's a good place." And he started to take two steps towards the calzone, and I stopped him. My car's in the collision place. I don't know if it's totaled. I don't know if they can fix it. But I told him, first thing your people have to do is get that damn calzone out. It's back there with my tennis rackets and my golf clubs. And I got marinara sauce all over the place.
I read this, and first off, I'm so glad you appear to be all right. You're going to go through tests, I know, and... Your beautiful bride, she had to go to the emergency room dealing with some pain. I certainly hope she gets better. Awful thing you went through. But this is almost like a Seinfeld episode. That all this chaos is going and you got rear-ended. It was a commercial truck. I won't say who because
right.
I don't want the FCC coming after me. All this just chaos is the only word I can think of. And through all this cloud of hysteria, you actually asked the cop about your calzone.
I got my priorities over there. My wife's saying, my neck. Meanwhile, I'm worried about the calzone over there. That's what it's all about,
you know,
after these years of marriage, Steve.
You have a new saying. It's sort of a Godfather knockoff. It's like, leave the wreck, take the calzone.
You know, Steve, I thought I got off scot-free because I didn't feel anything, you know, from the accident. And... everything was fine till the other day when I put my key card in at One Buck Place. My right hand lit up. I don't know what's going on. I might be radioactive or something. Anyway, we turn our attention to this Sunday clash between the Bucks and the Saints. Steve, I wrote my column Monday. The first sentence was, there's not going to be an asterisk on this one. Nobody's going to be talking about playing a lousy 49ers team, a reeling Panthers team. One loss does not make a reeling Saints team. They're mad. And you know, Drew Brees has done very well against the Bucs in his career. I believe he's 16-10, 26 starts. But for whatever reason, they've had his number the last year or two.
Yeah.
They had to go to a shootout, and then they won the last game last year with that Winston throw that, I hate to mention it again, might have cost them Quentin Nelson. How many times can I mention Quentin Nelson on this podcast, Lee? You're getting tired of it.
Nah.
Whatever.
Ira, you trying to say the Bucs could use a right guard?
Well, right guard is a famous product, too, don't forget, from the 60s.
Speaking of stink.
Right guard.
Right guard.
Speed stick. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So, Ira, your colleague on Sunday, I'm going to divert here a little bit. Your colleague, Ricky Reynolds, played for the Buccaneers for many years, played for the Patriots. On your show, Fox 13 Tailgate Sunday, Ricky Reynolds was asked, or I think he was just talking about the Bucs, and he flat out said right guard, quote, is terrible.
He did.
And Ricky Reynolds is a soft-spoken guy. He doesn't go that far, and I think everybody knows the right guard position is terrible. You know, a Saints team coming in. Do you think they stick with Benenach this Sunday?
I think if Benenach struggles, I'm not wasting any time, Lee. I'm going to put Kappa in and see what he can do. I'd start Benenach, see how if he can hold his own. You know, if I'm the Saints, I'm putting Rankins right over Benenach.
Oh, yeah.
I'm playing him on the left side of the interior. Right over Benenach, see what happens. We don't know what's going on with Dotson this week. I guess Wester did an okay job.
Yeah.
You know, but at some point they're going to have to replace Dotson. The right side of the Buck offensive line is going to be one of the offseason priorities going into 19.
I'll tell you this, and I was not on this bandwagon. Steve kind of was. I was not anti-J.R. Sweezy. Now, I'm not saying he was Conrad Dobler, but I didn't think, you know, Buck fans, oh, he's horrible. It was like God said charitless when he was hurt. And I never understood the venom for J.R. Sweezy. I never understood. Now, in retrospect, imagine quite a few Bucks fans wish J.R. Sweezy never was cut.
Every time Izbitz walks past the bank of TV screens at the stadium
Seattle.
After the Buck game is over, yeah, he's checking out Seattle, and he wants to see if Sweezy's playing and how he's playing. And by the way, and I'm going to say it before Izbitz gets the microphone, correct me if I'm wrong, Steven, I believe Seattle has the number one rushing attack in the National Football League, and they don't have a great running back. They are number one. Am I correct, Steven?
Well, you backed me.
How bad can Sweezy be playing?
You're correct.
Of course, Cutter was raving this week about Jameis and his decision-making and how he's doing a good job scrambling. And Jameis actually led the Bucs in rushing against the Panthers. That's not exactly a good thing.
No, it's not.
And I think that says more. And I wrote this on JoeBucksFan.com Wednesday morning. I think that says more about the, oh, can we say, pathetic running game of the Bucs than it does about Jameis' abilities.
Steve, we got to be honest, as we always are. They've played 12 games. Steve, is it a stretch to say that in 7 or 8 of those 12 games, Peyton Barber has had nowhere to run? Nowhere. Nowhere.
You know, it's interesting. This year, I would agree with a lot of that. I didn't think that was the issue with Doug Martin, but I can't find anybody who says Peyton Barber doesn't run hard, or is missing
dances,
or is missing a lot of holes, or
he's
tiptoeing around. I'm not seeing the same holes that I saw last year, the same opportunities, and it's really it's ugly. And I did confirm Seattle not only has the most rushing yards in the league, but they have the most attempts and 15 touchdowns on the ground.
What are they averaging a carry?
I don't have that in front of me,
all right.
But the point is they're pounding the rock. Everybody knows it's coming, and they can't stop them, which is pretty darn impressive. I put some of the failure of the Bucs running game on the coaches. I don't really feel that the runs are designed necessarily the way they should be, but that's just me. Still, the Bucs are third worst in the NFL in yards per carry.
Boy, they allow a tremendous amount of disruption in the backfield, Lee. By the time that Barber gets the ball, there's a guy right on him. That's my point. I would say 7 or 8 games this year. You know, there's maybe 3 or 4 where Barber's had some room to run, and we always give them credit when they run block well. They've pass protected a lot better than they've run blocked this year. There's no question about it.
Could it be fair to say, and this, let's be honest here. I'm sounding like Mike Francesco. Let's be honest. Outside of Cutter's first year in Tampa Bay, when he was coordinator,
you're right,
not a head coach,
you're right,
they've had no running game.
Could 3 years running,
could
so
be,
to speak.
Could it be fair to say that Cutter's offense is simply not built to run.
I don't know. I go back to 2015 like you guys do, and they ran like heck. They ran wherever they wanted to.
Once again, that was Lovie Smith. Lovie Smith and Cutter, I remember Cutter saying this more than once in his press conferences as offensive coordinator. We have a head coach who likes to run the ball.
I don't know, Lee. I'm not going there.
No?
Steve, I don't fault Cutter in terms of I don't think he's abandoning the run. I just don't think they do it very well. I'm not going to get on him for not trying to run. He does try to run. There's no consistency in that ground game.
Well, that's what I mean. I'm not saying...
I thought you were trying to say he abandons the run too early.
No. I just, for whatever reason, the offense is built schematically, what have you. It's just not built to be a running offense. Now, obviously, they're a passing offense. You know, look at the yards. Undebatable. I'm starting to wonder, 3 years running, with Cutter being the head coach and offensive coordinator, in theory, that his offense isn't geared to run. Just isn't geared to run. It's like putting a Pinto engine in a Mustang. It's not going to go 60 miles an hour.
I got a question for both of you guys. The last snap of the game from the Buck offense standpoint, they were facing a 3rd and 7. They might have been on their own 43-something, Steve. I was a little surprised they didn't throw the ball. Winston had been playing very well. And if you get a first down, the game's over. The game is over.
I said that to Lee.
I was a little surprised, Steve.
I said that to Lee in the press box. They had a chance to win the game
with
a first down. He didn't do it. He put the ball in the hands of his defense, which I've said this 100 times before in many different ways. You have the horses. This is why you have the number one overall pick. This is why you've got a $50 million receiver, blah, 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 blah. But they won the game. The defense did win the game for him.
Maybe it's a reflection that the defense was playing well. But I thought, I look at it at the opposite. Jameis has been playing mistake-free football. 3rd and 7, I'm going to trust Jameis. If it's not there, you throw it away. Maybe in Cutter's mind, it's a chance to waste another 40 seconds, and then we'll turn it over. And by the way, I don't think the punt was very good.
It was terrible. It was like 22 yards, I think.
Yeah, I was surprised. That was a bad punt.
Yeah, Anger's not having the greatest year. His name ought to be Laughter here, the way he's punting.
He was very good. He was very good 2 years ago, and he wasn't that good last year either, guys. Not that good.
Now, here's what I will say about Cutter. I've at times criticized him for going turtle. Well, there was a stat the NFL tweeted out last night. About the 4th and 1s. But it seems like in crucial situations where the game can turn either left or right, he always goes turtle. And the end of the game yesterday, or Sunday, I should say, Exhibit A. You got the best passing offense in the league, and you hand it to your running back, and one of the worst running offenses, and you pray to God he gets 5 yards. You pray to God the clock keeps running, and you even make 3 signs of the cross, so you hope the defense stops.
And the Panthers ran out of time, and to be truthful, I don't think Newton handled that sequence very well.
Well, he did not.
He kept throwing 5-yard balls. You can't do that.
Here's something that the national guys picked up on. I try to monitor the national guys a day or two after the game. I record a lot of these shows. And when they broke down the Bucks and the Panthers, the Bucks really didn't get any credit. Not just Florio, not just ESPN, all of them. The focus was something's wrong with Cam Newton. And they cite the example as the 4th down play, a Hail Mary. Newton's got one of the best guns in the league.
Yes.
They pulled him.
Yes.
And that's their example. Like, well, Ron Rivera didn't say it, but here's the evidence. They pulled him for another quarterback to throw that Hail Mary.
Steve, we can't be surprised that, 90% of the time, when the Bucs play the Panthers, no matter who wins the game, the focus is going to be on the Panthers. The Bucs don't get a lot of respect. And, Steve, quite frankly, when you start, 3 and 7, you don't command a lot of respect either.
No, that stat on Cutter was a little bit surprising, at least to me, that he led the NFL over the last 10 years, like Lee said, going for it on 4th and 1.
4th and 1. And didn't say anything about 4th and 2,
right,
or 4th and 3.
That drove me nuts. It's like, come on. If you're going to put out the stat, could you at least expand it to 4th and 1 and 4th and 2 or 4th and 3? But you know what? It does speak to losing, because if you're 4th and 1 and you're winning by 10, you don't go for it.
Yeah.
So that was part of it. Just to read the top 10 on that list, which just people can make what they will of it. Doug Peterson, 2nd most aggressive on 4th and 1. Sean McDermott, Dan Quinn, Jack Del Rio, who's Cutter's mentor, which I thought was neat, Sean Payton, Kyle Shanahan, Lovie Smith, Vance Joseph, and then John Gruden. A lot of Bucks names in there.
And just for amusement, read out the second worst.
The most conservative coaches on fourth and one, Jim Caldwell, Jeff Fisher, Pat Shurmur, Pete Carroll, Doug Marrone, Adam Gase, Chuck Pagano, Mike McCarthy, Jason Garrett, Bill O'Brien, Mike Tomlin.
Speaking of McCartney, when we did our Tuesday podcast, we taped it after the game. We didn't know McCartney was going to get a copy of the home game, so to speak, and asked to turn in his key card. I might say this later on one of the national shows. You guys correct me if I'm wrong.
Which national show?
But I'm sure I'm going to be asked about it by the Mad Dog. I have a very simple answer, and you guys tell me if it's too simplistic regarding Mike McCarthy's tenure in Green Bay.
Please.
Here it is. Rodgers said goodbye. Aaron Rodgers said move on. If Aaron Rodgers wanted McCarthy, McCarthy's still the coach. I know it's being a little simplistically, but Rodgers rules the roost in Green Bay. He's a Hall of Fame quarterback. He's 35. Don't got a lot of years left. They're going to do what Aaron Rodgers wants. If he would have piped up for Mike McCarthy. Steve, am I wrong? McCarthy doesn't lose his job.
I want to answer right now, Sage. Should the Buccaneers hire Mike McCarthy on Monday or right away? Should they hire him right away? Do you consider him a good hire for the Bucs right now? Or on Monday, let's say the Bucks lose.
Their cutter's not getting fired Monday, gentlemen. It's not happening.
No.
It's not happening.
Not unless...
Now, are you saying hire him the day after the season?
No.
Or say don't wait?
Should you hire him? Should you go all in on Mike McCarthy?
I don't have a problem with Mike McCarthy as the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Lee, he was successful. He won a Super Bowl. People complain about what he didn't win, but he won a Super Bowl. I don't think they were an extremely talented team. When you get past Aaron Rodgers, who's an all-timer. They got one receiver. They can't run the ball. And Clay Matthews, you know, is the leader of defense. He's not the player he used to be. So I don't think McCarthy's to blame. I think his voice, might have withered over 10 years, and that happens. That might be happening with
some other guys. He's been here, what, 13 years?
I would not have a problem with McCarthy roaming the Tampa Bay sidelines. I think they can do a lot worse, Lee. A lot worse.
I read enough stories, I would say no. Because I've read where the routes he has wide receivers running is pretty much the same thing as he had 13 years ago when Brett Favre was quarterback. So he really hasn't evolved much. He's stayed, I think, is the perfect word.
Stayed, nice.
Yeah,
S-T-A-I-D.
Yes, sir.
I got that right.
Yeah.
Steve, see that? No thesaurus needed over here.
You may have the best vocabulary I've ever heard.
Thank you, my friend.
You really.
As long as you don't give us your...
That's indescribable.
high school math test grades again, your region score.
98, 99, 100.
There it is.
It always cracks me up. A math quiz like you decided, of all things, to be a sports
writer. You know what's very unusual, guys? And I think you know that.
Yes, you.
The mind always houses a conflict. That's what the psychiatrist said at the end of Psycho, one of the all-time great movies. The mind, there's always a conflict. And he's talking about Norman Bates, and he says, in the end, the mother won the conflict. So she took over Norman. We're going to go from Psycho to Ira Kaufman. It's going to be a smooth transition.
He's talking about Norman Bates, not Norman Chad or Norman Esiason.
And, Steve, the reason I bring it up is I think a lot of people, sports writers, they're terrible at math.
Yes.
They're terrible at math.
I'm raising my hand.
And it's I take a little pride that I can write a little bit. I wouldn't have lasted that long writing. And, of course, who's reading out my copy but Mr. Risbitz over there? and he's caught a lot of mistakes, and he's added a few things that are nice. And he added a couple of mistakes over the years.
You ought to see all the mistakes he catches from me, my God.
Steve, it is unusual for a decent sports writer to be good at math. It's like two sides of the mind over there, Risbitz.
Ira, you know what?
At you, and I'm looking for somebody that can do either. That's the difference.
I'm going to play journalist here for a minute. How do you possibly know the math skills of other sports writers?
I've absolutely seen it.
I mean, I'm with you.
I've seen a guy after a game, and the guy said he ran 10 times for 50 yards. I wonder what that average is. I walk away. I walk away.
I can't tell you how much I agree with you,
Javier, if you're listening, that's 5.0 a carry, Javier.
I really believe there's a difference.
Am I making that up, Lee?
I mean, it's rare to find a person that's both. My dad would never use a calculator because it slowed him down. But when it came to English and grammar and vocabulary, I don't know what he was better at, that or math. He was even. He could never understand, kind of like Ted Williams couldn't understand how people can't hit a baseball.
That's a man after my own heart over there, Steven.
My old man could never understand why I was a mathematical illiterate. Just drove him batty. So I absolutely agree with that. Like, I'll give you an example with me. I bet if we sat around a bunch of sports writers, they would say a similar thing. When I went to college, I wasn't sure why I wanted to major, and I had an idea. So I started taking all kinds of classes, including accounting, which was a nightmare. Yeah, so anyway, I took journalism, liked writing, liked sports, of course, and I was getting A's in it. I liked what I was doing. And I'm like, well, let's put two and two together here. You're getting A's, and you like it. You might want to do that. And that's how I began. If I had to take an algebra class in college, I'd still be in college. This gets even more broader or fundamental, and I know I'm getting way off the track here about the Bucks. But when it comes to the stat geeks and writers and why they're, it's like dog and cat, exactly what you're talking about. The numbers guys, they don't care about words. They care about, they're like accountants. Whereas the writers, like, numbers bore them, numbers confuse them. Numbers irritate them.
Why can't you be more like the Kemper, Steve, and agree with me once in a while? Why can't you?
First, before I explain that, let's go hear about the phenomenal December offers at Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. All right, Sage, look, we're back, and fans are totally focused on this coaching situation. You brought it up, Mike McCarthy.
I did.
Now,
I like John Harbaugh better.
What happens?
I like Harbaugh better.
We're gonna make
not Jim Harbaugh, John.
No.
We're gonna make our predictions coming up in the podcast as always. And your podcast, of course, can be found at Podbean, iTunes, Google Play. Subscribe for an alert. You're not on the top 50, Ira. I'm sorry. We're still keeping track at Google Play, but we'll get you there.
You had to interject that. You had to throw that in.
Well, you were gonna ask, so I let you know. Now, top 50. Now, but. For sports writers listening, that's one more than 49. Very simply stated. Sunday night. I'm going to put you ahead to Sunday night before we do our predictions. Sunday night. If the Bucks lose, they're favored by, they're underdogs by what, 8-9?
Eight points.
They lose by a touchdown, 5-8, 22 days from Black Monday. What's Team Glazer doing if the Bucks are 5-8 and they're 22 games from Black Monday?
They're making their phone calls. They're doing their due diligence. That's what they've done in the past. It's what they'll continue to do. They're not going to wait till January 3rd to begin a search for a head coach. Guys, you remember when they had the press conference after Dungy was canned, and they sat there, and I think it was Gary Shelton that asked him the question, you mean to tell me you just fired the most successful coach in franchise history, and you have no idea who you're going to hire?
I thought that was Chris Thomas.
It might have been Chris Thomas. And who looks like Shelton on a bad day?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And the Glazers said, that's correct. We are starting our coaching search right now.
Yeah, it was Chris.
And an hour later, Reggie Roberts, who was then the PR man, came in and told everybody, I am authorized to say that we have open negotiations with Bill Parcells. That's what he said an hour later. So, you know, history tells us they don't waste any time. They had made decisions about Dungy going into the playoffs. They didn't wait for the playoffs. They knew what they wanted to do, and it was going to take a hell of a run by Dungy to keep his job, and it's going to take a hell of a run by Cutter to keep his job.
If the Bucks lose Sunday, can anything save Dirk Cutter, in your opinion?
I said he has to win, go 9-7, so I'm not backing off that. What's wrong with a winning season around here after you start 2-0? I don't care which way the arrow's going. It's going up. It's going sideways at this point. Have a freaking winning record around here once in a while.
And I'm not disagreeing with you, but you were the one person for years have always said this. And I don't disagree with you. But you kind of threw me a curveball there. You said you don't care which way the arrow's pointing. You've always said that about the Glazers. At the end of the season, they'd look which way the arrow's pointing.
Because
if it's down, goodbye.
Believe because I think this season's different. This season's different because they started 2-0 with a backup quarterback when everybody thought they were going to be 0-3. The Glazers got all excited, as did Buck Nation, and who can blame them? And then to end up and all of a sudden you're 3-7. What a shot to the solar plexus! So run the table. You want to save your job? Run the table.
Well, I said after last year on this podcast, I said, Don't ever give me the arrow direction thing ever again, because last year the arrow was pointing down. Last year, no matter how you want to spin it,
They brought him back.
They went 5-11. They brought him back, and Cutter himself said it showed great courage for the Glazers to do that. He knows how the league works, and now
you're going to be 2 years removed from your 9-7 season. That counts.
Yeah, I'm just asking you, Sage, that you, and you said it flat out, you don't think anything can save Dirk if they lose to the Saints. And I think in the Glazers' mind, if I can transport myself into the Glazer brain, I think they have to be looking at, well, hey, you know, we beat the Saints the last two games at home. We beat the Saints the last two games overall. Is it okay to think that we should beat this team? I mean, we have to play really well here. Otherwise, we're not going to be impressed. You think the Glazers are like that, Lee, that they would go there?
See, I'm going to play Isbits here. I'm going to be devil's advocate.
It's a dangerous game.
Yeah, I don't have a pen in my hand, so it can't be that dangerous. I'm torn on this. I really am. I don't disagree with anything you guys are saying, but I'm kind of looking at the big picture in the sense that Jameis, for a while there, looked like his career was teetering. If he continues to play like he has been, Cutter could argue, hey, I built the best offense in the NFL with two lousy quarterbacks. However, one of those lousy quarterbacks, I turned him around. You know, we're playing better than we ever did. I started out the season with Fitzpatrick because quarterback B was suspended. I can go both ways. To me, the one that's going to hurt Cutter the most is not offense. It's defense. Yeah, Steve and I wrote, Ira, at the end of last season, Mike Smith shouldn't have been brought back because he was in charge of the worst defense in the NFL. Yet Cutter, for reasons unknown, brought him back. Even this year, when he was on pace, hell-bent on setting the 99-year NFL record for worst defense, Cutter argued to keep him, saying something along the effect of, what good is that going to do by firing Mike Smith? A week later, he fired Mike Smith. Read in that what you wish. If that was Jason Light pulling the trigger, if that was the Glazers pulling the trigger, fill in the blank there, Ira. But at any rate, defense is going to kill Cutter because the Glazers will say, hey, Dirk, Duffner made a turnaround the defense. Why did you wait so long?
All right, Ira. Now let's transition to one of our favorite segments of the week. It's the picks, our picks. We got four games to play. I'm 9-3. You're 7-5. Lee is 6-6. So it's a tough sledding here for you, Ira. You know what? I'm going to go first. Right? I'm going to put it out there.
You're the leader. You're the leader, a clear leader in this group.
I'm the leader. You're not going to like it, what I'm going to pick, because it probably matches your pick. But I got to go with the Saints here. 30-24. Now, yes, the Saints have beaten them, have lost to the Bucs twice in a row. They've lost their last two trips to Raymond James Stadium. But I think they're just too good. I don't know how else to say it. I think they're just too good. Defensively, everyone's thinking about the Saints offense. I think they're too good defensively. They're balanced. And, you know, they lost to Dallas, but what nobody's talking about, in part because of that Dallas bias, is that it was Thursday night football, and they were on the road, and almost every team loses Thursday night football on the road. So there I go, Sage. Saints 30, Bucks 24.
Well said, Steve. Nice arguments. I'd love to pick up a game on you, but I must stay true to my principles. Saints 27, Bucks 16. The most underrated aspect of the Saints, Lee, is they got a pretty darn good defense. I believe they sacked Dak Prescott 7 times in that loss, and they only gave up 13 points. Like Steve said, the Bucks have had some recent success, but Lee, the Saints are highly motivated. They got a chance to wrap up the NFC South well before Christmas with a win. They got a chance to avenge a week one shocker against the Bucs. And most importantly, they're all pissed off. I think if they were on an 11-game winning streak, I'd like the Bucs chances better because I think they'd overlook the Bucs. Oddsmakers say Saints by 8. I've got the Saints 27-16, Saints by 11. Lee, you going to make it unanimous or are you going to stick out like a sore thumb?
Oh, no. I want to so bad jump on the Bucs bandwagon. They're playing so well. I shouldn't say so well. They're playing better than what they were.
And they played well at home this season. They have. They're
better.
4-2.
Now, I wouldn't say well. Better. Playing well, you score more than whatever they score. 3 points against the Redskins? I mean, come on. 34-14 Saints. The pumpkin is, well, I'm going to butcher some stupid
cliche. Yeah, you're butchering
it. The pumpkin turns orange at midnight, or whatever you want to call it. I know the carriage turns into a pumpkin at midnight, whatever. Now, the feel-good story ends Sunday, and then it's Cutter's back against the wall the rest of the season.
All right, Ira, one thing I wanted to mention regarding that last Saints game, you know, I think it's important to note how quickly things change in the NFL. And Dallas's offensive line 2 years ago, oh, they're the best in the league by far. Look at the way they built this thing this year. It's not really good anymore. And it just sort of shows you how you got to pounce on some of these windows. And I look at the Buccaneers' defensive line, and I say, as it's constructed, can they really expect more than one good year? I mean, do you have a year beyond next year with this Bucs defensive line? No. And how long does the Bucs offensive line continue to be such a dominant pass-blocking unit? I don't know. Makes me think of that.
You know, one guy to watch on the Saints D-line, and it's going to require some good guard play by Benenach and Marpet. Sheldon Rankins, who I think the Bucs were very interested in when he came out in his draft class. It took him a year or two, but he's a dominant player now. He's not Aaron Donald. He may not even be Gerald McCoy, but he's very, very good, Lee. And he's going to be a big test. And if he lines up at left defensive tackle, Benenach is going to need some help. And so is Kappa, if Kappa gets in the game.
Didn't you say when you began your description of Rankins that Benenach is going to play well?
I believe I did.
And what gives you any...
And you twisted your face into a kabuki mask when I said that.
Kabuki, yeah, we know what that is, but I like it. I like it. I don't know what that is, but I like it. Yeah, what makes you think he's capable of playing?
Now, so I got an opportunity to slap DeKemp around a little, so I got to take it. I said the Bucs have played well at home this year. He's questioning it. He says, I think they've been okay. Steve, they got a chance to go 5-2 at home with a win. I mean, those are the facts.
I agree with you. They've played well at home, in my opinion. Especially, you know what I think one of their biggest accomplishments was? Shutting out the Steelers in the second half of that game, getting the Steelers to put up a goose egg with Mike Smith coaching the team. And they never built on that, which I think was one of the big things that got him fired is, hey, it's like, hey, Mike, you guys showed you could do it. Now you roll over. So
I hounded Ira about a similar thing once before. So I got to be consistent here. You're raving about the Bucs pitching a shutout in the second half against the Steelers. What was the result of that game?
I believe it was 30 to 20, something like that.
Yeah, it's not in the Bucs. Lost, yeah. Come on. It's like, had the Bucs played better at home? Yes. Had they played well? I can't go that far. You know, they put 500 yards against the Redskins and lost?
This would be a signature win.
They played okay against the Panthers. I mean, they were begging the Panthers to tie that game in the fourth quarter, begging them. And Cam Newton didn't play so horribly they probably would have. I mean, how many times they have two three and outs in a row in the fourth quarter when they could have put that game away, didn't get the job done. The Redskins game, I bring that up again. The Steelers game, they lost. Philly, they played good. They played good. Maybe my definition of well is a lot as much.
And they outplayed the Panthers last week. They outplayed them.
They outplayed them, but the Panthers played like garbage. And once again, they put that game on a silver platter for the Panthers to tie it up. They didn't do it because the Panthers played lower than the Bucs did. So had the Bucs played better at home? Yes, I emphasize the word better.
He's upset, Steve, because if this keeps up, and especially if they win Sunday, DeKemper will have to shelve the words "den of depression."
Yep.
That's what it's all about.
That's true.
Steve, you don't want to give it up.
No. That's. I think we all have a different definition of well, which is fine. I'm just looking at 4-2, Ira. All right, before I wrap this up, Ira, let me say two quick things. One, the Sheldon Rankins thing. Dirk Cutter keeps bringing up Rankins. He's done it twice now. That's dangerous territory, considering Rankins was taken one spot after Vernon Hargraves.
Read into that what you will.
In the 2016 right. draft. If I'm Jason Light, I'm saying, Dirk, don't mention Sheldon Rankins.
Lay off Sheldon Rankins.
Don't talk about that guy.
Yeah.
Because that is, if you look at the dominoes after Sheldon Rankins, where you go to Swaggy and Vea and whatever, it's a wild situation.
You're right. It's a domino effect. Absolutely.
Last take, Ira, I wanted to get from you, and you'll send us out of here on this wisdom, and you can give the fans as well a closing take. The XFL, They made the announcement today. We're recording this Wednesday. It's official. Ken Hagen. They're in all these big markets, including now at Tampa's one of the eight. 2020, Raymond James Stadium. What should Buck fans think about this? What should the Glazers think? What do you think, Mr. Sage?
Well, I think if the XFL is marketed properly, I think they have a chance to take this this town by storm. And I don't want to use the word storm because the storm's not here anymore. But, look, you got to do it smart. You know, I don't have all that much faith in Vince McMahon as an NFL pundit. He's done one hell of a job marketing wrestling, I'll tell you that. But with the local team struggling the way they are, and it looks like 11th straight season without a playoff, you know, Lee, unless things get crazy in December, you know, the Lightning will be done in April or May, and the Rays are just starting up. I think there's a place for it. Now, I'm a little surprised, Steve, that they're not going to Orlando. I thought Orlando would be a natural spot. XFL's got some sex appeal. It's got some sex appeal, Lee. And that's one thing that that's one thing McMahon can sell. You know, lingerie football's not far behind. He's going to do some funky stuff. Don't try to take on the NFL. Stay in your lane. Do you hear? You know, don't let Donald Trump run you out of existence like he did with the USFL. You don't need any of that. And be happy with your share of the pie. But I think if it's well orchestrated and well run, it's got a chance, Steve. It's got a chance.
Anything else for the fans they need to know from you, Sage?
Well, I just think buzzard's luck for the Bucks that the Saints are coming off a loss. They're ornery, and when Drew Brees is ornery, he's a dangerous man. I'm just wondering if they got any – can anybody stop Michael Thomas from catching 15 balls? He did it in week one. The secondary's even younger now. The guy's elite. He's just elite. He was a little bit quiet in Dallas. That scares me. So he's the guy for Buck fans to worry about, I think, more than even Kamara. Michael Thomas is a stud, and he's going to prove it on Sunday.